You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, October 12th, 2015. You're listening to episode 176. My name is Rob. Jason is sitting there scratching his beard. What's so beard scratchy, Jason?
I was looking at my shelf over there.
Looking at that shelf, that's as you do.
Being built.
It's still in the process of being built.
Has working lights on it, though, now.
Hopefully, by the next time we record, it will be done being built.
I think by the next time we record, not only will that be done.
Be a good chance.
But, yeah, there's a pretty good chance.
Yeah. About a 70% chance.
I would put it as high as 80.
Whoa!
Because I know that the last piece that has to go up is actually already built.
Uh-huh. He just has to come in here and tack it in.
And the reason he didn't do that yet was because he wanted to be able to reach the wires on the top to make it easy to put the lights in. So.
Okay, well.
And then he's also been doing a patio for us, which should also be done the next time you come back.
Holy cow. Just in time, too. This is getting cold out here.
I know, right? And that's not... I mean, that's our fault. We waited to ask someone to do the patio until like a month ago.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, we need a patio. Because we just like to have it ready so that in spring we can just enjoy it.
Sure. Right?
So it's not it's not something we have to deal with beforehand.
I get you.
Yeah, but I like having the games on the shelves.
Yeah, it looks good.
Feel good about them there.
Looks good.
I need to get some cool stuff for the other shelves, but...
I can't help but comment on how many of the games on your game shelves are still in shrink wrap, Jason.
I knew you were going to say that.
Still in shrink wrap, Jason.
To make it worse, I actually unwrapped some.
Before putting them on the shelves?
Yeah.
Just so it didn't look so bad?
Yeah.
It still looks pretty bad.
It does. And some of those games I don't even like, actually.
I'm not going to name any of the games that are in shrink wrap because I'm afraid some of the people who ran those Kickstarters might be upset with you.
Well, one of them is Longhorn, which is by Bruno Cathala. So, sorry, Bruno. Bruno doesn't listen to the podcast. So, if he did, that'd be okay.
Yeah, but I can see a couple of Kickstarters up there that are still in shrink from, a couple of years ago.
So, that one on the top left there, it's just under Sentinels.
Right.
Yeah, that game. So, here's the thing.
That's a good game, man.
Have you played it?
I have played it.
A lot of people gave it negative reviews.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So then it made me not want to play it.
Christine and I played it at Gen Con.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was fun.
I actually thought about selling the copy because it's the Kickstarter edition.
Yeah?
Now I can't because now people will know maybe it's good. I don't know. I just heard it wasn't good. I heard the theme was a really bad fit. For the game, so it was very tacked on. So
it's I wouldn't say tacked on. I mean it's I can't keep talking without saying what the game is.
Fair
so
enough.
I'm gonna stop.
Yeah, we'll stop.
I thought it was fun.
Good. Hey, you liked it. I mean, if it's a game like that and you like it, chances are I will like it.
Yeah, I think you would.
There are some. I know we have different tastes, but there are that's the type of game where if you enjoyed it, it wouldn't be too heavy for me then. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There you go. So, what else is new?
I don't know.
Have you played any other games lately other than what you played at Grand Con?
No.
Okay.
I want to. I bought Sushi Go at my wife's request, so we're going to hopefully play that.
Okay,
I took it out of the shrink wrap.
Yeah.
What else? I bought another game, too. Oh, I bought The Builders.
The Builders.
Middle Ages, which is the original, and then they just came out with Builders Antiquities.
Uh-huh.
And everybody kept saying, did you buy the new one? Why didn't you buy the new one? And I was like, well, because the guy said that the guy from Out of the Box Games said, the Builders Middle Ages is good. The Builders Antiquities is good, but it's a little more complex. So I thought, hey, these games are both $15. So I'm going to start with the simpler one.
Sure.
Because I think my wife is more likely to like that. Plus, that one's the Middle Ages, the other one's Egypt, and frankly, I think the Middle Ages are a little cooler. So, the artwork was really did it for me.
Speaking of Egypt, did you hear that they just said that they think they may have discovered secret, previously undiscovered rooms in King Tut's tomb?
Seriously.
Like, there's been this guy who's just been looking back over old evidence and posited this theory that King Tut's tomb was actually built for Queen Nefertiti. But when Tut died, they're like, oh, crap, we got to put him somewhere. And they just basically adapted, 80% of the artifacts from Tut's tomb were originally made for Queen Nefertiti.
Added a beard.
They just added a beard. Yeah, literally, they just added a beard.
King Tut, looked pretty feminine, right?
Well, he was a kid. He was a kid. Yeah, but so, yeah. Oh, so, he's prepubescent, okay. Basically.
Okay, so...
So that was always the justification before. But now they think, like, literally... Yeah, so they went in there recently and did a new inspection of some of the walls, and they're like, oh, yeah, the plaster on these two walls is different from every other wall in the entire tomb. Also, the plaster that's on these walls that is different is of the same type as the entrance when Carter, who found the tomb, when Carter scraped a bunch of plaster off a wall and found the entrance to the tomb. It's that kind of plaster.
Oh,
but they can't just scrape it off because there's priceless paintings on that plaster. And so now they're going to do like radar scans and stuff to
see if it's open.
To see if they can find cavities behind
and
there.
Try and get around it.
And then they're going to go, the Egyptian Antiquities Department is going to have to just talk about it and figure out what the heck they're going to do.
I think it's like going from the top or something, or
I don't. Who knows?
Like priceless work of art, but if you bash it, possibly right. Untold riches behind it.
But we don't know
even
for
more
sure.
Priceless.
So all the best they can do is verify that there's something behind it.
In modern day and age, right? What they probably could and would do first is so they'll figure it out. And if they think there's a room behind it, they will drill a hole and then put a tube camera,
fiber optic camera,
with lights on it,
right?
And that,
but that's still damaging that priceless painting.
I say that's worth the risk. If they can do it in the corner, that's worth the risk.
We'll see. So, I don't know. You know,
I mean,
I think that's fascinating.
Egypt could use some awesome news right now. If they could figure out how to do that, right. I feel like they would be okay. Also, other awesome news.
Oh, wow.
Did you read the news today about the announcement NASA made?
Oh, yeah, water on Mars,
like,
dude.
There's officially water on Mars.
Liquid water on Mars.
Yes.
Yep, confirmed.
Like, what's funny is, so on IO9, they had this article that was like, it's kind of funny that NASA hasn't just come out and said this before, because they showed pictures dating back from, like, 2006,
uh-huh.
that they're like, clearly these are, like, channels made by water, like, and some of them were new looking.
Sure.
But they were always afraid to say, it's water, you know, so, but... Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to say it until they know for
water
sure.
on Mars,
That's
man.
So cool, man.
I mean, I don't think you can, like, just drink it, because, you know...
They said it's very, very high in salt. And which makes sense, because salt would reduce, or would lower the freezing temperature.
Ah, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think they had very specific words for that kind of solution.
Super salinated, like, water.
Yeah, brined or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
But
it's water.
Yeah.
So
it's awesome.
And I was reading today too that they in 2020 they're planning to send the Europa probe, which mm-hmm. will not land on Europa because they don't know where to land it. So instead, it will fly around Europa at only 23 kilometers above the surface. You know how close
that
is?
So cool.
and I guess they said it will include the controversial ice penetrating radar. And I was like, wait, why is that controversial? Right? Because of what mm-hmm. like, I don't understand. Are they afraid to, like, there's alien life forms and they're going to, like, break their privacy or something? Like, what? But no, it's because it saps so much power that, like, out of the, like, it takes so much energy to mm-hmm. use that radar that they had to reconfigure some things on the probe.
Oh, really?
To make it be able to support that.
Oh, wow.
So some people at NASA weren't okay with that.
Wow.
But I mean, dude, if you're going to send something to take pictures of Europa, probably we should probably try and look through, figure out
what's
deep
under
the ice
is. Yeah,
cause
right.
That will tell us whether or not we can get through it with a sub.
Right.
You know, because like they said, the ice that is in Antarctica, like at Lake mm-hmm. Vostok, took them like 10 years to drill through.
Sure.
They like drilled for a decade to get to the bottom of it safely.
Yeah.
But NASA also said that they will not send any rovers to Mars where the water is.
Yeah, because they don't want to take any chance of contaminating it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, so I read the book The Martian, right?
Yeah.
And like one of the things he does, I'm not going to try and spoil anything, but like he has something that's contaminated, right?
Okay.
And so what he does is he throws it outside and leaves it for a day. And he's like, any bacteria on this is toast because it's been in a near vacuum for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then he brings it back inside and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I think what they're saying is that in order for them to take samples, they have to, I mean, they need to take these very specific small samples into, So they're not going to contaminate the water supply on Mars, but they could be testing with instruments that are not guaranteed to be fully clean. They could get false positives that way, I think is the idea.
Well, I'm just saying if these instruments have been in a near vacuum for years, what are the chances they're actually going to have microbial life?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, those things generally run off tiny little nuclear reactors, generate electricity on them, right?
So there's heat around.
There's some kind of heat. There's always a chance. I'm just guessing. Yeah, I don't know for sure.
I mean, I know they try really hard not to do that.
Right, but...
But, you know, so they did send a nuclear reactor to another planet, so there's that. Hey, what's up?
Yeah. You read The Martian. I just read Seven Eves, which is a book by Neal Stephenson. It's been getting rave reviews from all kinds of people. It's the book where in the first sentence in the first page, the moon explodes. I hated that book.
Yeah, you told me.
I finally finished it last night. I hated everything. I got to a point where I was about 100 pages from the end. And this is, you know, close to a 900-page book.
Mm-hmm.
100 pages from the end, and finally something interesting happened. And I was, and once I realized that I was like, oh, I finally want to see what's on the next page. I realized that, and I almost just closed the book and didn't finish it because I was so pissed. So maybe I totally missed the point. I don't know, but...
Well, I mean, different books for different people, right?
Yeah, I
mean,
I don't know.
Like, I've read really good books that other people have hated, and I've read books that people have loved that I've hated.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, there's just...
So, I don't know.
Different strokes for different folks, as they say.
I need to go with some just crappy pulpy garbage next, just to cleanse my brain. Because that's pretty hard science fiction, this book.
Yeah. Don't read The Martian then.
No.
Also very hard science fiction.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Because my mom actually saw me read The Martian. She's like, can I read that? I was like, you can, but you might not like it.
I don't know
it.
If you should.
Like, I was super confused sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, she's a smart lady, but like, math and science aren't like the thing she's super interested in. So I'm like, you might just think this is just like, your eyes might glaze when you're reading this. Cause it's not like, cause there were times when I was like, all right, science is kind of cool, but can you just tell me what happens?
Try 750 pages of science before you actually get to a scene with some characters doing interesting things with other characters.
The book is that long.
It's 900 pages, man.
I will read a book that's
almost
that long.
900 pages. Like, I mean, whatever. That's no big deal. I mean, I like long books when they're good.
Right. I realize to this day, like, the only book that I've ever read that's that long is the Bible. Like, literally, like, no other book. Never. I've tried. Like, like The Stand. I freaking love that movie, and I've heard the book is so much better, and it's, like, 4 gajillion pages.
Yeah.
Because there's the extended edition, which is just, like, the you're gonna hate yourself edition.
Yeah.
No. I've got like maybe 200 pages into it. Stephen King, though, man, people love Stephen King, and I'm gonna get like yelled at for saying this, but I don't think he's a very good writer. I'm sorry. Like,
see, I disagree with you on that. I think he's fantastic.
This is what I don't like about Stephen King. Right? Let's pretend you and I are having a conversation in a Stephen King book. I'll narrate for how this goes.
Okay.
You walk into a room, and I say, "Hi, Rob," and then it's like, "Rob Couch stood there." Brief description of Rob Couch. When Rob Couch was a young boy, 40 pages about your growing up life, and then all of a sudden it's just like, hey Jason, what's up? Like, I can't handle that. The Stand is just filled with that.
See, you're exaggerating. It's not really 40 pages,
but it's like 10.
It could be like 10. Even that might be an exaggeration. So, the thing about Seven Eves is that
it is 40 pages.
It's on a space station, first of all. Dude floats into the next pod in the space station and then spends literally 7 pages talking about the science of how he floated from that room into the next room.
That's terrible.
Okay. And then then back to him in the room, he looks around and thinks about that thing on the wall there, and then 12 more pages about that thing and the science behind that thing on the wall. Don't, by the way, this book at one point, spoiler alert, I'm not spoiling too much, skips ahead 5,000 years into future history of mankind. And so the last third of the book is 5,000 years into the future, okay? And then what do they do for the last third of the book? Talk about the 5,000 years that we missed.
That's
I thought you skipped it for a reason.
Right. No, wow.
I have not hated a book.
So 5,000 years later, how different are people? Like, well, they should literally be speaking a different language.
I'm not going to talk.
I'm looking this up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it on the podcast. Because if somebody
hates themselves and wants to read a really long book that you think is terrible.
If they actually maybe enjoy it, I don't spoil it.
Read a textbook. Read a science textbook. Brief History of Time.
Yeah. The next time you and I are sharing a beer or talking over a beer, I will complain more about this book, but not while we're recording.
It sounds really bad.
It's I'm angry. I'm angry that it wasted so much of my time.
My favorite, The Martian, he'll be like, I'll spare you the math, but I'm going to end up dead if I do that. So yeah. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So,
I did play a couple of games recently, though.
Really?
Yeah. The weekend before Grand Con, we actually spent some time with a couple of our friends. They have a little lake house, and
you went down there, huh?
Yeah, spent the weekend with them, and that was a lot of fun. And we played some games. We played Small World Underground. That's the second time I've played that. I have decided that I don't like Small World Underground. Period.
Wow.
Original Small World, I love. Mm-hmm. I freaking love it. Small World Underground, I do not care for at all. And the biggest difference is that in Underground, there's a river in the middle of the board, and it cuts the board in half. And for the majority of the gameplay, you're either playing on the left side of the board or on the right side of the board, and you're not going to play on both sides.
Because it's too hard to cross over?
Because it's so hard to cross over the river don't do it.
That's stupid.
And it cuts the whole thing in half, and it limits the ability for you to really kind of get into it with a lot of people. It's a really limiting, and I don't care for that at all. And then there are other expansion things in there that like you were just talking about with that other game, that add complexity, and I don't think the game needs that complexity to be a compelling experience. I think it's adding complexity just to be complex.
Right. Well, because they're like, hey, people love this game, we need to make expansions. The only way to make more expansions for this is to make it more complex.
Right.
So let's do that.
And it's not adding any strategy, any interesting strategy. It's not adding any new fun to the game for me.
See, and that's why I like when people do not expansions, but other like things in the same realm. Like, a new thing has been to make a board game and then make a dice game of it, or a card game of it. Like, I think that's cool, right? Because it's saying, here's a different way to enjoy this game. I wasn't going to, there's no way I would buy this because it's $45 and no one will play this game with me.
Mm-hmm.
But Hanabi, they now have a tile game, like Mahjong tiles of Hanabi. Play it the exact same way. At least that's what the outside said. Maybe there's some different rules, but you just set the tiles up facing away from you, right?
Okay.
It's genius because you don't have to hold the stupid tiles in your hand. You could shift them or move them to help you remember stuff. But that was cool. And I really wanted to buy it to try and play it like just with my wife, like just the two of us play together. Mm-hmm. Because I've heard it's decent with two players, actually. They said it's a very different experience, but I did not, because that's expensive.
Sure. So. That's a lot of money. The other game that we played is Tokaido.
Yeah, how was that?
Taikoto. Man, words. Tokaido, it was pretty good. It was fun. We played four-player. We played it twice with them, and it was good. The first time playing and the second time playing were very different experiences. It's one of those games where the second time you play it, you're gonna learn a lot from that first playthrough, right? The game has one serious fundamental flaw that I think ruins it, though.
What's that?
The setup of the game is that the players are moving along the Tokaido Road from Kyoto to Tokyo.
Oh, that's why it's called that. Okay.
Yeah. And you're travelers and you're moving from point to point along this road, and whoever's the farthest back on the road is the next player who takes their turn. Okay. And you're basically leapfrogging people and where different places where you can stop, you can perform different actions. But, periodically through the, as you're playing the game, you have to stop at an inn or a tavern, you know, just basically a place to stop and sleep and eat. Okay. And the last person to get there is the first person to leave. Okay. What that means is if you're playing a four-player game, the first person to get there, every other player gets two turns where that player gets to go again.
Oh.
And that's crappy.
Yeah. Talk about downtime.
And it's a lot of downtime. And I mean, it's not a lot because decisions in that game, once you know what you're doing, are pretty easy to make, you know. But it just, if from a strategic point of view, you're just completely screwed.
Yeah.
If you're the first one there, it's the end of it for you. You're lost. And the rules have, I mean, in the rule book, it even says, after you play this game a couple of times, you're going to notice that this sucks. So for advanced players, you can add this extra rule where the first person there gets two extra coins, and the second person there gets one extra coin, and the third person there gets nothing, but the last person there has to spend an extra coin.
That's not enough to be meaningful?
But it's not enough to really be meaningful.
Okay.
You know, yeah, and so fun. It's a beautiful game. The game looks beautiful, but I think even if there was maybe one less in that you stop at, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be so punishing. But
right.
But if you get to be the first person into one of those inns, if that happens to you twice, you have no chance of winning that game. Even if that happens to you one time,
it's going
to
hurt.
It's going to hurt. And if you do it twice, you're out of the game.
Basically, you just want to be in last place the whole time and then not have to stop at any of the inns and then win.
Yeah, yeah. And that was really frustrating. Once that we realized that the second time through the game, and it was really discouraging.
Right.
Really discouraging.
That's pretty lame, actually.
Yeah. So anyway, and I'm not sure, we haven't played it two player yet. We certainly will give it a try two player.
So you guys own it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I bought that. I actually bought that around Christmas last year, but just didn't have time to get it out, to get it to the table until now. But the couple who we were playing with, they borrowed it for a while and they played it two player a couple of times, and they said that it didn't work as well too. That they're it's pretty like it. There's a real runaway leader problem with two player.
Okay.
So I don't know. So that's disappointing. I'd heard a lot of really wonderful glowing things about the game.
And the artwork is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a great looking game, excellent design visually, but mechanically I think it's not as
slick as everyone thinks.
Yeah, not as everyone, rewarding as I had been led to believe. So I'm a little disappointed by that.
That's anyway, too bad.
So that's what I've been doing apart from Grand Con stuff lately.
Yeah. We were going to talk about a topic here.
Yeah.
Ways into the show, we should probably do that, huh?
Yeah, well, so we were going to talk about replayability.
Yeah. You know? So something whenever I'm playing a game for the first time, I always think, do I want to play this game again? Like, that's one of the first things I'm thinking about when I play a game. My opinion is it can be deceiving, right? Like, I can think I want to play a game again, and then I'm wrong. Like, then I play it again, and I'm like, oh, here's all the things I didn't like about this game, and now I'm playing it again. So, but there are those games, right, that you'll play over and over and over again, like for you Morels, like you guys play that a ton. Like,
yeah.
So what is it that does that for you? Like, that makes you want to play a game over and over again?
Yeah. And there's two ways to look at that. Like, you know, like I was just saying with Tokaido, I said, I want to play it again to try the two player version. And that's me saying, I don't want to play it again because the experience that I had was so great that I want to have that again.
Right.
That's me saying, I want to have this alternative experience with this product to see if it's any better.
See, hope that it's better.
You know, and I have a lot of games that are that way.
Right.
You know, I think we all do. Games where you play it once, you go, well, that was neat. And I'll play it again and try it this way. And maybe it'll be better that way. Maybe I'll like it more. And that's a problem, if you ask me. That is an indication of a game that has a big issue.
Yes.
So what makes me want to just keep on playing that same game over and over again?
Right.
Games that make me feel like we've talked about this idea before. Games that make me feel like I'm breaking the game, doing something cool by pulling off a trick. Number one, because that's a really rewarding, exciting feeling, and I want to keep having that feeling when I play a game.
Yep.
Dominion's great about that, and I think that's actually something that Saloon Tycoon does pretty well.
Yeah.
But then there's games like Carcassonne, where you never feel like you're breaking the game, but I feel like in that one, I like playing that game a lot, and I like playing it over and over and over again, because the suspense and the excitement of it, of final scoring, I mean, is tied directly to the decisions that I make while I'm playing the game. You know, I don't know what tile I'm going to get when I'm playing Carcassonne, but I make the decision about where to put it, you know, and I know that the decisions that I make have a very, very direct effect on the score that I'm going to get.
Right.
Period. And so I really feel like I have a lot of agency in the outcome of the game. And if I play poorly, if I lose, it's because I didn't make as good of decisions with the things that I was given as my opponent.
Right.
You know, so that, that for me is exciting and makes me want to say, maybe I can do it just a little bit better next time.
Right.
Yeah. So games where I feel like the game is letting me break it, and games where the game is encouraging me to make smarter decisions next time. Those are the games that I really like to play over and over again.
Okay. I buy that. Yeah. I think for me, sometimes it's like a comfort thing, right? Like, I like the experience of this game, so I want to just keep having that experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a long time, Settlers of Catan, we played it over and over again because it's what we did, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny because we haven't played the game in a long time, and I realize I don't really miss that game all that mm-hmm. much. Like, if we played it again, it'd be weird.
Sure.
You know? Like, I don't know if I'll ever play it again because I can't play normal because I haven't done that in years.
Sure.
And if we don't play with our one friends who we play that with that
your
one
weird
with,
variant,
then,
yeah,
then I don't know what would happen. So, but when I think about the games that I like playing the most, you know, one of the games we played repeat a lot that I'd love to play again, is the game Boomo, which Boomo. It's a mass market game. It's maybe the same people that made Uno. And it's a game where in the center of the board, it's a card game. Mm-hmm. You are trying to count up to 60, right? But if you go over 60, it explodes. And you've got these bombs in front of you, like that are like sizzling, right? Like they're burning.
Mm-hmm.
And when they explode, you have to flip it over. Last player to not have all their bombs gone wins. But of course, we like to play teams, so we played teams
mm-hmm.
with it. And it's just such a cool experience because there's so many chances for you to feel clever, right? Mm-hmm. For you to be like, gotcha. And I love that about sure. games. Like when you can feel like you pulled one over on everyone and that perfect scenario yeah. happens, Dominion is great for that, right? Because
yep.
you're not pulling one over on anyone, but you're like, I just chained 14 cards on my turn. Check me out.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that didn't get me anything, but right. it felt cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Flip City is another game like that. Because it's like a baby Dominion type mm-hmm. game. And you still never played that.
Yeah. No, I need to. Yeah.
I think you'll really dig it. But when that one starts a little slower, once you get moving, you start chaining stuff. You're like, yeah, this is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you mentioned Morels before. Morels definitely for me fits into that same Carcassonne category where I feel like if I lose, it's because my opponent made better choices than I did. Did you hurt yourself there?
Smash my hand into the table.
Good job.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I get you. And that's, mm-hmm. That's always cool. Cause then, you know, mm-hmm. that also is very gratifying, right? Like,
yeah.
Hey, my opponent beat me because they earned it
mm-hmm.
or because I made poor decisions and that's great.
Yeah.
Just looking at my game shelf, trying to think of some other games that I like to play a lot.
Mm-hmm. Phantom of the Opera up there.
Yep. Phantom of the Opera. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a game where, and you know, it's funny cause a lot of the games you're mentioning are two player games, right?
Yeah.
I think another thing for replayability is games where I like to expose them to new people, right?
Sure, yeah.
Camel Up is a game like that for me.
Yeah.
Like, I love playing with people who've never played it before,
mm-hmm.
but I've gotten to where it's not as clever as I used to think it was, so
yeah.
playing with not new people is not as fun,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that I can play it with new people and be like, see how awesome this is, and like, this is great! And then, like, I could play with just the people I played with before and be like, eh, it's all right. So mm-hmm. that to me is kind of interesting. I think part of the reason I like replayability so much is because I'm lazy. I hate reading. I don't like reading new rules. I don't like learning new games.
Yeah,
I want them to be taught to me.
Yeah.
Like, when we were at the game library at Gen Con, like, every time I would ask Con or Josh Mills when we were looking for a game, or even Nate and Kelly, have you played this before? Has somebody here played this before? No? Okay. Then never mind. Let's just keep going.
Right, right.
Like, I don't even care. I don't want to play it. Because, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the worst part of playing a game for the first time is reading the rules.
Yep.
You know?
And just trying to make sure, do I understand this? Do I, you know, like,
yeah.
And I just want to play a game, right?
Yeah, right.
So, like, if I was rich, I would just have someone who was, like, I'd buy games and then say, your job is to just learn how to play them for me and then just teach me how to play them.
Yeah. Yeah. Teach me as we play. Right. Yeah. That's rough. That's rough. I agree with you. I mean, there are times when Christine and I are like, hey, it's game night. Let's pull something out, you know, and we look at our shelf and we say, Well, we've got those seven games that we've never played before. Let's play one of those. And then we'd pick one, and I would open the rules, and I would get halfway through, and I'd be like, I just don't care.
Right.
I just don't care. Let's just play Carcassonne again, or let's play Morels again.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I've got games down there like that I really want to play. I just don't want to read the rules.
Yeah.
Las Vegas is another game for me that I can play anytime.
Oh, sure.
It's
yeah.
always amazing.
Yeah.
And that is because it makes you want to punch your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience never gets old. Yep. I mean, like, every time you play Las Vegas at Gen Con, you're swearing at each other and you're like, "You yep. jerk." And I just love, mm-hmm. I love that. And doing things to just like, I'm not winning here, but I could really antagonize these people and that'll be fun too.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. I've managed to introduce Las Vegas to a few other people recently, non-gamer people, and, mm-hmm. and it's been a huge hit.
Yeah.
So yeah, Las Vegas is great. So, but let's get back to our topic, you know? So what can we do as designers to make our games fit into those areas that are trying to achieve those goals that we like to encourage replayability? I mean, so in topics from the rules perspective, make it easy to get into, right?
Yep.
Yeah, as much as possible. Quick start rules are great, you know.
Right.
Easy to teach, easy structure with complex decisions, but easy structure to introduce simple ideas to people.
Right, but not too simple.
But not
because
too
if
simple.
It's too simple, it's going to get boring.
Sure.
On multiple replays.
Sure.
You know?
So that's right.
So it's kind of a balance in there.
It sure is.
Now, granted, there are some people that would disagree and say, but I like to play the same heavy euro all the time. But that just means you're more into reading rules, right, than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get more into that.
Yeah, obviously we're making assumptions about
right.
a certain audience.
Talking about how we think.
Right.
That's why you come here and listen, because that's what we do. I think that picking a theme that fits really well can help that, or mm-hmm. being abstract. I think those are good things for that. I think if you have a theme that doesn't fit, that the more you play it, the mm-hmm. more you expose that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're going to be constantly playing with new people, having a game and you want it, like if you want like one of those games you want to introduce to people,
mm-hmm.
it shouldn't have a huge learning curve. Like
sure.
Camel Up is good for that, right? Because
right.
you can play for the first time and make a really good bet, and you can play for the 20th time and make a really bad bet.
Mm-hmm.
And the odds of that aren't that much different.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's partly luck and it's partly, you know, it's partly skill, but I mean, honestly, it's mostly luck with that game when you
yeah.
make a bet.
Yeah.
Cause you can make a bet and be completely wrong four turns later. Like,
yeah. Or make a stupid bet in the beginning of the game and have it miraculously
right.
be the best
yes.
thing you ever did
yep.
in the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that helps with new people. But if you're looking for a game, you're going to strategically replay with friends over and over again. That's a killer.
Yeah.
Because you want to be able to get better at it. So there's two different ways to think at it. If you want your game to be that game that people are always introducing to new people, then you need to make it to where there's enough luck that new players playing against players who've been playing a lot won't feel
mm-hmm.
really terrible. Las Vegas is a good example of that, because in the first turn, if I'm new, I might commit too many dice to things.
Sure.
And after round one, I stop doing
You're
that.
You're not going to do that
because
again.
Because I'm like, unless I'm really lucky and it happened to pay off. But uh-huh. still, when you're sitting there waiting and everyone else is still playing and you're like, why is everyone else still playing? And people are like, I just like to go a little slower with it. Oh, yeah, maybe I should do that too.
Yeah. So, unless on that first roll, you get five dice of the same number. And you're like,
and it's got a lot of
a
money.
Good number.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I would still do that too. But I mean, in general, right?
Yeah.
There's a way you play, and luck has a good deal to do with it.
Yep.
But again, if you're looking at a game you want to be highly strategic on,
mm-hmm.
then you're probably not going to be introducing that to new people all the time.
Right.
And I think one of the things that helps replayability that's got nothing to do with the actual game is to know the audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
To if you have a group of friends, figure out the type of game you like and stick with that,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Sure.
But yeah, so approachable, I think, is important, as always, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, easy to get into rules. And then a theme that fits and helps you want to keep playing, because
mm-hmm.
theme mismatch can really get old after a
sure.
while.
Sure, you know, and maybe kind of a familiar theme too. There's
yep.
a lot to be said for familiarity with
the sure
theme.
Is yeah, yeah, yeah. Because yeah. like a really far out there theme, like something that's just kind of kitschy, could get after a while. You'd be like, you know,
mm-hmm.
this theme is lame.
The jokes get old.
Yeah,
yeah,
yes,
right.
Like Cards Against Humanity, for
right.
instance, you know.
Right.
So there's a game that is lacking in replayability.
Because the jokes just aren't funny anymore.
Right. Right. you've got to constantly expand it to make that the case.
You know, and I mean, so I'm finally having like Christine's family for 2 years, every time we'd go over there, her dad would want to play, let's play that dirty card game. And finally this summer, he was like, I'm not sure that game's so funny anymore. I'm like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
He gets it.
Right.
He gets it. He gets why we don't want to play it anymore.
2 years, dude.
Well, but yeah, but yeah. So anyway, not to derail.
So there's a good example though of, if the combos in the game get old, mm-hmm. like, so here's another way. Don't have a single strategy to win, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Cause that is like,
yeah, that's boring.
Every time I play, I always do this.
Yeah.
And it's predictable.
Right.
And like with Settlers, I kind of always had a strategy to win. But you had to adapt a strategy mid-game as resources didn't come up or mm-hmm. things were more abundant in areas you thought, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, having a strategy where it's always, you know, mm-hmm. 1 + 2 = 3, not good.
Not good. Not the right choice. Yeah.
And that's something that I struggle with working on the smaller microgame things mm-hmm. is that.
Yeah, it's tough.
Like, hey, this can have the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Even a game like Love Letter that I love showing new people, mm-hmm. that's a game that to me doesn't have a ton of replayability because it's so simple, right?
It's the just the random draw, you right. know, is really what that game has
right.
for variability.
Well, again, it's a game that I yeah. love showing new people,
mm-hmm. right?
Because it's a good intro game. You're starting yeah. a game night, having people over, show them that game because it's easy to get into.
Yep.
The theme is really approachable.
Yep.
And you just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
But like for Steph and I to play that game over and over again, I would never do it because it's just not, you know.
Yeah, agree with you. I agree with you. So
okay, so I think we've got some good rules there.
I think so.
Can we think of anything else?
Nothing's coming to mind.
I'm just trying to glancing at, yeah. You know, I mean, really, your game being a one-trick pony makes it not super replayable mm-hmm. for consistent players. Again, for new players, that the rules change there because, you know, and that's where the quick start rules and things like that help with showing new players,
right?
So that they immediately want to jump in with you. You know, unless you have a really, really good group, I feel like most co-op games don't have a ton of replayability because
mm-hmm.
if you have a really cohesive group, right, mm-hmm. then maybe, but...
Well, I think I agree with you on that. In the exceptions are things like Sentinels because you have so many that's different true. Characters to choose from, so many different bad right. guys' environments, a lot of
and
so
again,
many
that's variety. Lots of expanding to make it work, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Variability, but, yeah.
I mean, that is... but it's funny because you think of a game like chess, which most people would tell you is infinite really playable. I don't think so. I think chess is boring because there's not enough options. Okay, well,
are so many options in chess, Jason.
No, but there's not enough. I think in that case, it comes back to theme, right? Like, hey, the theme is just dull. Like, let's move these pieces around. It's a predictable way that you can move them, right? It's very limiting. So, I mean, I get that there's a million bajillion games in chess that have never been played, even though a million bajillion games have been played. But that doesn't intrigue me. What does intrigue me is that now chess players have teams of people running computer simulations for them to look for those moves that have never been made in professional games so that they can exploit those because people don't know how to defend against them.
Sure.
And that's what the new champions are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, I think, is super cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it feels like cheating, but it's super cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's what we got here for this.
Why don't you pitch a game then?
Let's pitch a game. This is probably a pretty easy pitch. And I'm going to pitch the game kind of in the new style that I came up with.
Okay.
So the idea of this game is you are trying to race from one side of a bridge to another or one side of a track to another, I haven't decided, but it's just mm-hmm. a straight track. Picture that you have tarot cards. Did I say that right that time?
Mm-hmm.
I know last show I biffed it. You have several tarot cards, like maybe 6 or 7 of them, right? Now the, maybe more than that, maybe like 10. The track is going to be 6 long. The track is going to be 6 long, and then you're going to have cards, little micro cards that sit on top of those tarot cards. And the micro cards would only cover, so the tarot cards would be like, would each have, say, 12 dots on them of different colors, right? And the dots, would be arranged in three rows, right? Okay. So four, four, and four.
Okay.
A micro card would fit over two of those in a row. So if you set them down, the micro card would cover two of the three dots, but the third one would still be. So if you were to slide the micro card, it would reveal a different dot underneath, right?
Okay.
The micro cards would be randomized to where you had some that had impassable slots, and had different things like that. So that's kind of the track setup. You set that up. And then each player has a character, and the idea is you want to get from one side to the other, like I said. So, where do we start? What do you do to move? Well, so to move across there, each dot you want to move on costs one move.
Okay.
Unless the dot is the same color as your pawn, in which case it costs zero move.
Okay.
So if I'm standing in front of a dot that's blue and I'm blue, I can move on to the blue dot for free. And if there's five blue dots in a row, I can move straight down those blue dots without stopping, unless I hit a dot that's not my color and then I have to stop. If I was counting, say I had three move, right? And I went on a green one, that's one, and then three blue, that's nothing. And then another green one, that's two. And then another blue, that's nothing. And then a red one, that's three. So I've moved like eight spaces for three. So okay. It's kind of a unique, different way to move. So that's how you move. Another thing is if there's another character in front of you, on the dot in front of you, when I move to try and move past that character, I actually push that character forward.
Mm.
So if they're one dot ahead of me, they continue to stay one dot ahead of me as long as I keep going forward, right? So you have to make the decision of, do I go around or do I push them? Because going around is going to take more, especially if they're on my color. So you can actually set yourself up by getting on your opponent's color, knowing that they're going to push you just to get through there faster. So there's that. So that's kind of the basic movement of the game. So let's talk about what you do on your turn. So on your turn, you've got, you have five energy cubes, and you can take, you can use all of them if you want, but at the start of your next turn, you're only going to regain one energy cube. Which stinks because now you have two and every action costs two. So, or every good action. So you have four cards. The four cards have four specific actions you can take. Move two forward, move two sideways, jump one forward, which means you can jump over an obstacle. So if I'm on a dot and there's a dot in front of me, I'm actually moving two, but I'm jumping over that. Right.
Okay.
And then there's also refresh your energy, which means you waste your turn to play the card. But when you do that, you get all five energy back at the end of the turn, right? So at any given time, you only have two cards in your hand. You shuffle your cards up, you put two face down and two in your hand. When you spend a card, you get to put it down and then pick up the next card off the deck. You could also spend one energy to discard a card and draw a new card. So there's what you can do with one energy. All right. So the other actions on your turn, you can... I haven't thought this part through yet. I'm going to be honest.
Okay.
So you can slide a card. For one point, you can slide one of the mini cards to adjust what's underneath. So you can peek underneath and be like, oh, hey, that's my color. I'm going to slide this card to help me. Or you could flip a card if you wanted, because the idea is the cards would be double-sided, these micro cards, right? So I could flip it over and suddenly, wow, I've got something else revealed. And again, you can peek at that stuff, but you can't do that if anyone's already on it, because it just makes it a pain.
Sure.
And then the last action you can take is for 3 points, you can roll a d6, right? And move that many spaces. So three or better is awesome. Anything less than that and sucks to be you, especially if you roll a one, because you've now spent an extra thing to only move one when you could have spent one to move two. You could have spent two to move two, right? So it's a risk reward thing. Obviously, 2/3 of the time, it's going to pay off.
Yeah.
But there's going to be times when you're going to hate yourself for it. So the other thing you do on your turn is at the very start of your turn, you're going to roll a d6. And there are six tiles, like I said. So the tarot cards. There's six of those.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever one you roll, you're going to get to somehow affect that tile. In the original game, it was by knocking out one of the tiles mm-hmm. because it was the it was made to be like in those in the tile holders. So you can't do that now. So maybe you would be putting like a little marker on it to make that part impassable. But we did have an issue where it just things became too impassable, and you were like the game took longer than it needed to because you were trying to drive around too many things and people were traffic jamming and stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, what else? So I'm a little discombobulated because of the changes and trying to reverse engineer them sure. in my head. First player to get to the end wins. I think that's most of the game. Yeah.
Okay.
And the idea is that on your turn for free, you get to affect the board, but you can pay to affect the board in a more meaningful way. So, you know, maybe even instead of having the option of being able to flip a card or, instead of being the option of being to flip a card for two, you also for one could pay to adjust that die roll. So you roll a D6 to decide which tile you're going to affect. Mm-hmm. And you could pay one to make it either up one or down one, right? So if it's six, you could make it one or five. If it's two, you can make it one or three. That'd be another way to be able to spend one tile.
Sure.
And there are a couple more features on the tiles. Instead of just the normal dotted squares, there's also rainbow squares. There's a few rainbow squares, and those everybody gets the free move on. They're like okay. super easy. There's X squares, and on those, they're impassable. You can't get rid of them. If you have a tile with that on it, the card with that, you can't even flip that card. You are stuck with that there.
Hmm.
You can't shift it. You can't do anything to it. And then there are energy squares. And if you land on one of those squares or pass through one of those squares as it is, you get an energy cube back for free.
Okay.
So it's worth going a little out of your way maybe sure. to get that because
yeah.
Energy is so precious in the game. And that's basically the whole game. It's got more depth when you're playing it because mm-hmm. there's a lot of decisions about which way to go and how to,
sure.
you know.
Yeah, now there's basically three straight lines. Is it only a three-player game?
Four.
It works four, okay.
Yeah, so you're weaving in and out of the lines kind of as you go. At the beginning of the game, you can start in any of those three lines.
Oh, okay.
So if you're fourth player, you're kind of looking to see what people are doing.
Got it.
Because you don't want to push people if you can avoid it, so...
Got it.
And because the different colors are randomized,
mm-hmm.
people tend to take different paths because they're shooting for their freebie moves.
Yeah, yeah.
So the game takes about 20 minutes to play, which I think for a game like that is perfect.
Sure.
It's
great.
Yeah, and I think there's some more variables that could be added into it. One of the people that played it suggested adding in unique racers because that makes it really replayable mm-hmm. to have, speaking of replayability,
right.
to have multiple racers that you could be. Mm-hmm. And then the tarot cards, like I said, if there were 10 of them, they could be double-sided
mm-hmm.
Because printing on two sides is the same price. Same with the micro deck of like 20 cards, double-sided, you now have 40 different track pieces you right. can put in there.
Right.
And you could even have them marked in the corner for each player gets X.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just go straight through like player one lays one down, player mm-hmm. two lays one down, player three lays one down, and you just...
What if you made one of the racers a halfling with chicken strapped to his right. feet?
Yes, yes. So I didn't intend to design another game that uh-huh. was like that because I've got that game that Andy and I had worked on for so long. This just kind of happened. Like, I was trying to figure out a game, and I was like, I think the game's about crossing a bridge. And then I was like, well, I guess they're racing across the bridge. And then people were like, this is a Mario Kart game. And I was like, this reminds me of that other game. But it's really a lot more simplified because you're not tracking speed or anything like that or maneuvering.
Sure.
It's just simple. It's just get across the bridge. Here's how your movement works. I don't know if it would be cars or not. Nate Darty had a cool suggestion, which was what if you were like, it was like American Ninja Warrior and you were trying to go through the obstacle course,
sure. yeah, yeah.
but you're all on it at the same time.
Yeah.
And like each different color is actually a different obstacle type, like crawling or climbing or swinging or swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And each player is just different at that, right? So mm-hmm. So then you've just got different contestants that are good at different things, that was kind of interesting, I thought.
Yeah.
You could easily give the racers or contestants or whatever a special ability that they could use every once in a while or pay sure. energy to use.
Sure.
And I think that would be cool. So,
Sounds great.
So anyways, yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. I was very encouraged by a couple friends, and then a couple other people who published games who weren't necessarily interested in that game, but who just, because it wasn't their style, but who yeah. said, you should really pursue this game. This has a lot of potential, and the fact that you designed it in 24 hours is good. And I said, well, the joke's on you, because I actually designed this game in about 2 hours, which was funny. That was my initial thought estimate. Yeah. It just took me 5 hours to get to the 2 hours to be able to design the game I wanted.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, yeah, so that's my game. It doesn't have a name right now because I don't know the theme, so it's hard to make a theme, hard to make a name without a theme. Right, right. So, great. Yeah. I think that's what we got.
Okay. Do we have any emails?
We do not. Okay. We went through them last week. So.
All right. Then that's going to do her. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Come on back all the time and listen. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JASlingerland, and I am at poorly_designed. Give us the likes on Facebook and the 5-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. And call our Google Voice number 770-TEL-BTG. Tweet at us with hashtag BTG rumors to say horrible things about us. And send us an email to Building Game. Or no, I already said that one. Go to the website, buildinggamepodcast.com. That's good enough. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.